It's my pleasure to introduce the Learning Circle. This is a group that comes together to explore and share what is deeply meaningful to each member, such as, what is life? What are we? Is the cosmos alive? Poetry and a book are usually used as catalysts for dialogue. The group was started about 15 years ago by Doug Seeley, with some people attending year after year after year. There's about a dozen members at the moment, but new faces are always most welcome. Usually it operates in a free-flowing dialogue, and we wondered if we would recreate something of that this morning. However, with time restraints and the unavailability of a number of members, we decided to have a more scripted version, giving our impressions of this wonderful book of poetry and readings called Eternal Echoes. We are like the blind men and the elephant, if you remember that story. Each of us has experienced the book somewhat differently, but maybe our collective view will at least give some hints of the whole.
Good morning. My name is Pam Hart, and I'm a born and bred Irish woman. I arise today blessed by all things, wings of breath, delight of eyes, wonder of whisper, intimacy of touch, eternity of soul, urgency of thought, miracle of health. May I live this day compassionate of heart, gentle in word, graciousness in awareness, courageous in thought, generous in love. Barbara Boyle will now light the candle.
Few lines I have for the meditation for you to ponder is a quote from the book and movie entitled Cloud Atlas, written by David Mitchell. And then we'll have 2 minutes of silence afterwards. Our lives are not our own. From womb to tomb, we are bound to others, past and present. And by each crime and every kindness, we birth our future. The consequences of an individual's life ripple throughout eternity. Before we start our presentation today, here are a few words of John O'Donohue himself regarding the essence of his book. This book attempts a poetic and speculative exploration of the creative tension between longing and belonging. The text has a dual structure. The first layer of image, story, and reflection. And underlying this is a more philosophic subtext, which might invite a more personal journey of reflection. The modest hope is that in a broken world full of such eerie silence, this little reflection might clear a space in the heart so that the eternal echoes of your embrace may become audible. A true sense of belonging should allow us to become free and creative and inhabit the silent depth within us. Such belonging would be flexible, open, and challenging. It should enable us to enter the circle of friendship at the very heart of creation, When your true heart speaks, the echo will return to assure you that every moment of your presence happens in the shelter of the invisible circle. These eternal echoes will transfigure your hunger to belong.
So, welcome to what I guess we should describe as the learning semicircle this morning. As Christine mentioned, a number of us were not able to be here this morning, including our facilitator, Doug Seeley, who, if the technology gods are cooperating, is currently watching us from Geneva, Switzerland. So, hi and good evening, Doug. He has, however, sent us some of his own thoughts on the book, which will be read by Barbara Boyle.
Thank you, Judy. So these are Doug's words, paraphrased as well as with quotations from the book itself. In Doug's view, John O'Donohue recognized the sense of belonging together within the divine. O'Donohue says, "Real friendship or love is not manufactured or achieved by an act of will or intention. Friendship is always an act of recognition. It could be a meeting on the street or at a party or at a lecture or just a simple, banal introduction. Then suddenly there is a flash of recognition and the embers of kinship grow. There is an awakening between you, a sense of ancient knowing." O'Donohue sheds a bright beam on all the nooks and crannies of my soul, as Doug is saying, on all the nooks and crannies of my soul that are so submerged in the overwhelming inundation of messages of more consumption and the supremacy of the separate individual, and instead opens me up to wonder. O'Donohue says, "Wonder is a beautiful style of perception. When you wonder at something, your mind voyages deep into its possibility and nature. You linger among its presences. It is lovely to see a relationship that even after years still causes you to be alive in his or her mystery. It enlarges the heart and calls it to gratitude and to praise." Encountering O'Donohue's thought is like suddenly falling in love with another who opens up new portals in life, full of strange but exciting new experiences, an unknown universe that I recognize was always there. O'Donohue tells us, "Anam Cara in Celtic means soul friendship, and the quality of the connection is called dukkhas. When you have dukkhas with someone, there is a flow of spirit and vitality between you. Echoes of each other's longing brings and holds you within the one circle of belonging. Soul searching is the excavation of the dukkhas in and around us in order to belong more fully to ourselves and to participate in our inner heritage in a critical and creative way." Doug continues, "For me, O'Donohue goes to the core of belonging in community, to the harmony between our shared experiences and values, and with an openness to the vastness of each of our individual universes." To quote O'Donohue once more, In order to be, we need to be with. There is something incomplete in purely individual presence. Belonging together with others completes something in us. Not alone do we long for community, but at a deeper level, we are already a community of spirit. We do not so much build community as if it were some external or objective structure. We allow community to emerge as a whole diversity of presences which belong together in some minimal harmony.
For this guy, I'll highlight aspects that made sense to me from his marvelous Celtic poetry. O'Donohue deals with belonging, with being aware of, and integrated with aspects of nature, with whom I can relate. O'Donohue uses his magical manner with words that often reached into my own inner being, which in turn felt so natural whenever I, in my travels, explore the natural surroundings of Victoria. O'Donohue expressed as follows, "I truly believe that each one of us is blessed with the human capacity of having and understanding the uniqueness that is potentially waiting to be recognized within all of us." Further, O'Donohue says that the spirits, and this part relates to his worldly knowledge of what's going on. He was not just a pastoral priest. And he says that being seduced by our consumer capitalist approach that leads us to believe only by having more materially can we attain personal satisfaction. And, he even said, salvation, which fundamentalists proclaim. Now, personally, I relate to, quote, Eckhart with his phrase, our inner senses. And Donohue, in turn, broadens that definition, which he said is to utilize, to understand how vital belonging to a community that we have of light souls that both sustain and nurture our beings along the path of our journey. This is for me, right here, right now, in this Unitarian community. So some words that spring out of this book that mean to this guy, and how do they define in a way our individual path with the complexions of our society that O'Donohue clearly expresses. This enables me to become deeply attached to the natural ways of being. And Donohue said, "They are always there for me to drink out of this well of contentment and challenge." These are some of the words that reached out and touched me.
So, I've already changed my mind several times about what to say about this book. Fairly early on in my reading, I was experiencing a degree of irritation because many of the passages seemed rather verbose expressions of the obvious, alternating with overly fanciful extrapolations. Also, I felt that for Unitarian readers, particularly those of a more humanist bent, I should add a movie censor-style warning. Frequent use of Trinitarian and mystic language reader discretion advised. Having said that, I reminded myself that the author is a poet, and there are emotional truths which can sometimes only be conveyed in poetic language and metaphor. Taking that perspective, I was able to be much more open to what he was trying to say. The book is a whole range of musings on a number of broad concepts related to the idea of longing and belonging, with titles like The Haunted Room in the Mind, Brittle Language Numbs Longing, The Addiction of Distraction. One thread is the importance of place in belonging. I initially thought he was overemphasizing that, but I recently realized I was witnessing a manifestation of it at the Northern Gateway hearings, when almost all the speakers, myself included, were speaking passionately in defense of our own land and water, which we experience as part of our identity. He is coming from his own emotional truth, and when he expresses his feelings on various aspects of the human condition, I can often resonate. For example, his passages about the alienation in our consumer society, or the importance of forgiveness. By substituting the word meditation for prayer, I was able to accept much of the section entitled Prayer, a bridge between longing and belonging. However, I still have some trouble with his reference to some Celtic influences' beliefs like fairies, angels, and shape-changing druids, and wasn't quite sure what he was trying to convey with his retelling of some of the legends. Notwithstanding the emotional alienation he perceives in society, and which I largely agree with, I did more than raise an eyebrow when he stated that thought without feeling is lethal. To me, it seems obvious that feeling without thinking can be even more immediately lethal. While it's good that he calls attention to what he perceives as too little attention to authentic feeling, I don't think we should throw the baby out with the bathwater and deny the legitimate place of intellect. For me, the ideal is a balance. I'm a rational person, both in the generally used sense and more specifically Myers-Briggs personality type. I can see that his writings would have great appeal to those who are closer to his personality type in the feeling dimension. One member of the group said she wouldn't know how she felt about the book for several months. I think I'm beginning to understand what she means. It's certainly challenging, but some of the concepts are still percolating, even against the objections of my rational mind.
Hi, I'd like to introduce myself first off. They call me Gordon from Gordon, and I bring greetings from your sister church, Gordon United on Goldstream, and wish all of you in the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship the best of God's blessings. Is there any place for me in this busy, noisy world? The cry of the soul more and more becomes, as the life becomes more and more mechanical and the spiritual well-being of the soul is just forgotten in the rush for material belongings. In Eternal Echoes, John O'Donohue talks about the soul and its need to belong. In his all-too-short life, John O'Donohue has made a special mission of helping people who are spiritual but not religious find their place in the world. He shows us through the sacred places of his childhood in Ireland how to break free from the scramble to possess things and find instead peace of soul. In this, he's very similar to Joseph Campbell, the great scholar of folk religion. Follow your bliss, was what Campbell said, and help people through the study of mythology to get back to what their souls crave more than anything else, a place where they can belong, a root for the rootless. The biggest problem in getting one's head around these ideas is that they fly in the face of the conventional secular thinking. One needs to lose oneself in another in order to find oneself. Part of the problem, of course, is Every soul is different in what it's looking for. Because of this, advertisers have rushed in to sell goods, thinking that these material things will satisfy those deep cravings. Problem is that all of this latest gadgetry and all the physical objects in the world cannot and will not fill this aching emptiness within. O'Donohue starts by taking people to the bleak, storm-ravaged west of Ireland. From a material point of view, there's virtually nothing there at all. By finding these sacred spots, however, people from ages past have found peace of mind and soul by losing that craving and enjoying the minimal things that the soul really does need. Animal needs like food, clothing, shelter. Beyond this, the soul is simply sated with things. The deep needs have not been met, but in the poverty of the physical, the wealth of the spiritual can bloom. As we give up our 21st century cravings, we find a strange satisfaction in being able to share and thus to feed the soul's deep need to belong. We don't need to go to Ireland or India, as Campbell suggests, to follow our bliss. What is required is a loving, open heart, and find another who can share it, and then seek diligently to fill it. This can happen in the busy streets of Victoria as easily as on a windswept beach far away. What needs to happen is that we must turn our gaze outwards rather than bewailing our own miseries. As we do, we find those inner needs satisfied. We find ourselves belonging rather than wishing that we did belong somewhere. In simplest terms, we find ourselves, our souls, and our God.
I wish to look at two themes that O'Donohue pursues. One is related to the current series we have on spiritual practice. O'Donohue uses the word presence, or feeling alive and attentive to the presence of the present moment. This is his spiritual practice, be this in response to nature and the landscape, to a piece of music, to sculpture and a work of art, or being alone in silence. But then he adds being fully present in the presence of another person and all the messages they send in their hands, their face, their words, and their actions. Being with others is very important to O'Donohue. Respect, love, reverence are, however, often mixed with disappointments and loss. That leads into a whole chapter on loss. First, he writes of all the joys and risks in opening up to other people. He encourages many relationships and not being scared of change, complexity, and responsibility. But he stresses that to cope with this freedom, we need to be rooted and know our own thoughts and convictions. He feels many are afraid of this freedom, a topic the psychologist Eric Fromm used to write about in his book, if you remember, Escape from Freedom. One quote from Eternal Echo says, "Freedom challenges us to awaken and realize all the possibilities that sleep in the clay of our souls. There is no cage for the soul. Who are you when you are alone with yourself?" O'Donohue then devotes a whole chapter to loss and the dark valley of broken belonging. He says, "Befriend your illness. Carry the pain of another. But in the long run, only you
can avoid self-exile. Only you can move the bricks of your prison walls. To help us cope with the many tragedies and losses of life, he believes each of us has a personal angel. What a lovely bit of fantasy. Many of us might wish for a personal angel, but would have great difficulty in believing in one. Imagine that belief is one of our Unitarian principles. Principle number 8, a personal angel to guide each one of us. O'Donohue says angels lessen guilt and oppression and help us befriend our losses and our failures, help us rise above all the difficult challenges. His angels help us to be compassionate towards ourselves as well as to others. I could do with a Catholic Celtic angel in my life.